Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. When Molly and I lived in Dalton, Georgia, we worked with the church at Chatsworth, Georgia, a small town about 12 miles east of Dalton. After one Wednesday night Bible study, we were driving back to our home in Dalton. Molly said we needed to stop to get some milk and a loaf of bread. I went into a convenience store on the north side of Dalton to purchase the item she wanted. As I walked by the newsstand, I noticed a preteen boy at the newsstand. He was deeply involved in a really raunchy magazine. It upset me to know that children had access to such obscene literature. When I got back into the car, I told Molly what I had seen. We resolved that night that we were going to do something about pornography in our city. I preached a series of sermons on the local radio station on pornography. I then contacted some influential citizens in Dalton. One of those citizens was Stan Maples, Marla Maples' father, and vice president of Golden Gallon Chain of convenience stores in East Tennessee and North Georgia. I knew he was active in the Baptist Church. I hoped he would join us in removing pornography from Dalton and Chatsworth. I told him I had been by one of the Golden Gallon stores and discovered a stack of pornography magazines in his store. I also told him my radio sermon the next morning would be on pornography. I asked him if he would give me permission to say, "The pornography magazines in all the Golden Gallon stores will be removed next week." He gave me permission to say that. His agreement to remove the pornography from the Golden Gallon stores put pressure on the drug stores, grocery stores, and other convenience stores, with one exception. One of the convenience store owners was a member of the Church of Christ from Cleveland, Tennessee. He was making so much money with his pornography to remove it from his stores. The pressure became so great, he finally had no choice. We then organized a community meeting to deal with pornography. We received permission from the county commissioners to have a meeting in the county courthouse. We invited Dalton's chief of police, the county sheriff, the county judge, and other prominent Daltonians to the meeting. The district attorney agreed to write all the stores a letter and ask them to remove all pornographic materials from their stores. We had assembled magazines from the various stores and displayed them in the courthouse for everyone to examine. I made a speech outlining the great damage pornography does to individuals and to families. There were never more than 100 people directly involved in our campaign to rid our city of moral trash. But with the Lord's help, and with the support of good people in Dalton, we succeeded in removing pornography from the shelves of all the stores in Dalton. We then appointed a committee to monitor the businesses to prevent the store owners from sneaking the filth back into Dalton. I have one sad story relating to our efforts. Two ladies on our committee went to a drugstore that was owned by a member of the Church of Christ. They picked up some lesbian magazines and asked him if he knew they were in his store. He became very angry and accused them of bringing the magazines into his store. The women reported his behavior to the elders of the church. The elders counseled with the man. He later went before the church and confessed his ungodly attitude and actions. He also cooperated with us in removing all pornography from our city. But do not store owners have a right to sell whatever they choose? As a matter of fact, they do not. They are not allowed to sell cocaine or heroin or marijuana or other illegal drugs. The sad truth is that pornography may do more harm in the long run than any of these illegal drugs. I do not remember where I read the following ideas, but they are appropriate. A man has a right to eat poison soup, but he has no right to sell it. If an individual desires to fill his mind with pornographic trash, He has the political right to do that. But he has no right to distribute it wherever he pleases. Our laws are designed to protect our citizens, especially our children and young people. It is an absolute disgrace when a nation permits greedy businessmen to fill our cities and counties with soul-condemning obscenity and pornography. Are we not already witnessing the enormous damage pornography does to the nation and to families? The word pornography is derived from two Greek words, pornos, meaning prostitute, and graphos, meaning writing. The word literally means writing about prostitutes. That many people who are motivated by the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, are enticed to look at pornography should not be surprising. But how can anyone who claims to be a Christian indulge in such sleazy activities? Bible believers should know how Satan operates to lead men and women into sin. In case you have forgotten or never knew, please listen to James, the Lord's brother. Let no man say when he is tempted, "I am tempted of God." For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither does he tempt any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. James 1:13-15. Did you know that some marriage counselors and sex therapists actually encourage husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends to watch pornographic movies? Pamela Paul, a journalist, has written one of the most disturbing books on pornography I have ever read. Her book has the title, Pornified: How Pornography is Transforming Our Lives, Our Relationships, and Our Families. In that book, Pamela Paul writes, "Others argue that pornography is far from neutral. It's good for you. Proponents, meaning industry insiders, pro-porn feminists, certain sex and couples counselors, legal defenders of the industry, sex scribes, assign an array of benefits to pornography." Page 73. Pamela Paul also has written, "Sex therapists and couples counselors are often behind the move toward mutual acceptance of porn. Sometimes they recommend that couples view erotic films together, suggesting that, particularly for couples with low sexual desire, such images can generate new ideas, increase tolerance for each other's predilections, and enhance arousal." Page 144. I shall read more excerpts from Pamela Paul's book as we continue our discussion. Oddly enough, there are preachers and theologians who endorse or do not condemn pornography. Do they not know how one's thinking controls one's behavior? The wise man Solomon advised, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Proverbs 4:23. Is there anyone on earth so dull that he thinks filling one's heart with filth will not affect his behavior? Jesus urged his Jewish listeners, "Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks." Matthew 12:33-34. If we do not keep evil thoughts out of our hearts, we shall engage in evil acts. The Apostle Paul listed a number of attitudes and attributes Christians ought to cultivate: truth, honesty, justice, purity, loveliness, things of good report, virtue, and things worthy of praise. He then commanded, "Think on these things." Philippians 4:8. The tense of the verb think demands that we keep on thinking about these things. And which of these qualities can be harmonized with pornography? In his great Sermon on the Mount, our Lord said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Matthew 5:8. The Apostle Paul knew the temptations young men face. He admonished Timothy to treat the older women as mothers and the younger women as sisters with all purity. 1 Timothy 5:2. In that same chapter, Paul commanded Timothy, "Keep yourself pure." 1 Timothy 5:22. Our preachers and faithful Christians oppose to pornography because the Bible is anti-sex. As a matter of fact, Christianity has the healthiest attitude towards sex of any other philosophy or theology or worldview. The Bible actually exalts sex within the marriage relationship, but condemns it in all other relationships. I'm fully aware of the rantings and ravings of people like Hugh Hefner, Bob Guccione, Larry Flynt, Bertrand Russell, and other debauchees. But the people who honor the laws of God are the healthiest, happiest, and most productive people on earth. Besides, when we die, we have the hope of eternal life. Dr. Neil Gallagher, a gospel preacher from the state of Rhode Island, is one of the most effective porno fighters in the United States. He has been instrumental in removing pornography from stores, airports, and other marketplaces from California to Maine and from Michigan to Florida. Dr. Gallagher's book, How to Stop the Porno Plague, is the best book available on getting rid of pornography in our towns and cities. The book needs to be in the hands of all law enforcement personnel, district attorneys, judges, and preachers and parents. Dr. Gallagher provides a number of case histories in his book. Please listen to some of these tragic stories. In the summer of 1973, the attention of the world was turned to Houston, Texas, where the police dug up the bodies of 22 teenage boys. They had been sexually abused and murdered by Elmer Wayne Henley and Dean Coral. Police found in their apartments sex torture devices sold in pornography shops. Page 15. Years ago, J. Edgar Hoover, writing in This Week magazine, described porno's influence on sex crimes. What we do know is that an overwhelmingly large number of cases of sex crimes is associated with pornography. We know that sex criminals read it and are clearly influenced by it. I believe pornography is a major source of sex violence. I believe if we eliminate the distribution of such items, we shall greatly reduce our frightening crime rate. Page 19. We are now aware that J. Edgar Hoover was not infallible, although at one time we tended to believe he was nearly infallible. However, we cannot disregard the authority of experience with which Mr. Hoover spoke. His testimony substantially agrees with that of hundreds of other knowledgeable people. There is not the slightest doubt that pornography contributes to crime and delinquency in our nation. A male, age 27, and a female, age 23, murdered a girl, age 10, and two boys, ages 12 and 17. Prior to their death, the murderers employed torture and sexual perversion of young girls in pornographic poses and a library of pornographic and sadistic literature found in the male's possession. Page 20. Seven Oklahoma male youths gang attacked a 15-year-old female from Texas, raping her and forcing her to commit unnatural acts with them. Four of the youths, two sons of attorneys, admitted being incited to commit the act by reading obscene magazines and looking at lewd photographs. Page 20. A 15-year-old boy grabbed a 9-year-old girl, dragged her into the brush, and was ripping off her clothes. The girl screamed and the youth fled. The next day he was picked up by the police. He admitted he had done the same thing in Houston, Galveston, and now San Antonio. He said his father kept pornographic pictures in the top dresser drawer and that each time he pored over them, the urge would come over him. Page 20. First Assistant State's Attorney Edward M. Booth, Jacksonville, Florida, writes in his letter of May the 27th, 1966, "We have four felony charges pending in criminal courts at this time, wherein adults are charged with various sexual offenses involving minor children. in each of these four cases, we have found that obscene literature and other pornographic materials were used to entice minor children ranging in ages from 8 to 16 years of age, including both boys and girls, into indulging in various lewd and lascivious sexual acts with adults involved. I have found that most cases involving sexual activities with minor children have obscene and pornographic literature and materials involved, and perhaps this is true throughout the country. Page 21. Dr. Gallagher includes in his book an article from World Radio News. The article, "I Cannot Believe I Am That Powerful," was written by Jack Exum, a gospel preacher I have known for more than 50 years. Please listen to the article. "This week, a very strange thing happened. I got angry. While shopping in one of the more popular national chain stores, I noticed the most controversial book on display, The Joy of Sex. It was placed on shelves that could easily be reached by a youngster, and I could picture my 9-year-old daughter opening the book and paging through it. The book was replete with line drawings of every conceivable position of sexual behavior. By long distance, I called the chief executive officer. His office was 3,000 miles away. He was appreciative of my interest and promised to look into the matter at once. Then I called the local store manager and explained that I had been in contact with the chief executive officer of the chain. I gave him my name and address and read the letter that expressed my concern. He responded by removing the book from the shelves immediately. The following day, I received a return call from the head office. Each store had been informed, literally instructed, to remove the books immediately and return to the supplier and refuse any further orders. He thanked me for my concern and interest. The answer to my anger was action. To this day, no one at the head office knows anything about me but my name and address. But they know more about us than we know about them. They know it is our money that builds their buildings, pays their salaries, clothes their children. They know that when a reasonable complaint comes in, it represents one who in turn may reach hundreds in influence. They know the power of the buyer. We don't. If one individual, unknown except by name and address, can exercise power in a giant corporation that influences hundreds of stores, think what all of us could do in turning the tide on any important moral issue if we just got angry. I can't believe I'm that powerful." Pages 52 and 53. In his book, How to Stop the Porno Plague, Dr. Gallagher reviews the July 1976 issue of Hustler, a gutter-type magazine published by Larry Flint, a truly abominable character. There was a full-page color cartoon, Chester, the molester, showing a man seducing a doll-clutching, pigtailed girl. A centerfold showing Gerry Ford, Henry Kissinger, and Nelson Rockefeller involved in sexual acts with an animated Statue of Liberty, and caricatures of George Washington, Paul Revere, and Benjamin Franklin involved in a variety of sex acts with prostitutes. Page 13. "Yes, I know about the First Amendment, but is anyone so morally stupid as to believe that such gross immorality should be legally protected?" I want to return now to Pamela Paul's tremendously disturbing book, Pornified. Pamela Paul records the testimony of a woman whose husband was addicted to pornography on the Internet. "I find that porn's prevalence is a serious hindrance to my comfort level in relationships. Whether it's porn DVDs and magazines lying around the house, countless porn files downloaded on their computers, or even trips to strip clubs, almost every guy I have dated, as well as my male friends, is very open about his interest in porn. As a result, my body image suffers tremendously. I wonder if I am insecure or if the images I see guys ogle every day has done this to me." Page 2. One of the true tragedies of our culture is the involvement of religious leaders and their members. Pamela Paul quotes Jonathan Daugherty, founder of Be Broken Ministries of San Antonio. At least half of the men in Christian churches struggle with pornography at some level. It's becoming the leading factor in divorce. According to a 2000 survey of clergy members conducted by Christianity Today and Leadership Magazine, about 40% of clergy, meaning preachers, acknowledge visiting sexually explicit websites. Page 20. Some of the viewers of pornography say they need variety. Pamela Paul says, sociologist Michael Kimmel has found that sexual fantasies have become increasingly shaped by the standards of porn. Two-thirds of male fantasies feature more than one woman, almost always with strangers or near strangers. Page 27. One husband confessed, "If my wife asked me to stop using porn, I'd tell her she's out of her mind." Page 28. It is not the uneducated and ignorant only who are addicted to pornography. Pamela Paul furnishes these disturbing statistics. In 2004, 43 employees in Kentucky State Transportation Department were suspended or fired for viewing pornography on their office computers. In 2002, a computer abuse sweep at Virginia Department of Transportation found that 17 employees were accessing the Internet on their computers more than 2 hours daily to look at pornography online. 15 were subsequently fired, and 2 resigned. In February 2004, an audit manager at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston resigned after 15 investigations documenting employee visits to pornography websites in the workplace resulted in only 4 terminations. In one case, a pediatric dentist was logging on every morning to visit sites with graphic depictions of sex with young teenagers, and then seeing young patients later in that day. Pages 35 and 36. There is so much more valuable information in Pamela Paul's book I would like to discuss with you, but time will not allow it today. In the closing minutes of our study, I shall turn to another book with the title, Pornography, A Human Tragedy, edited by Tom Menery. There are chapters by Dr. James Dobson, Jr., Dr. C. Everett Koop, Henson McAuliffe, and Charles Colson. Every chapter is filled with extremely valuable information. I will take the time to read a few excerpts from the book. Dr. Dobson says the ACLU opposes the production of child pornography. But once it is produced, there should be no restriction on the sale of it. Page 36. Dr. Dobson lists the following objections to pornography. Depictions of violence against women are related to violence against women in real life. Pornography is degrading and humiliating to women. For a certain percentage of men, the use of pornography is progressive and addictive in nature. Organized crime controls more than 85% of all commercially produced pornography in America. Pedophiles, who abuse an average of 366 boys and girls in a lifetime, typically use pornography to soften children's defenses against sexual exploitation. Outlets for obscenity are magnets for sex-related crimes. So-called adult bookstores are often centers of disease and homosexual activity. I want to give special emphasis to the harm associated with pornography that falls into the hands of children and adolescents. Latchkey kids by the millions are watching porn on cable and reading their parents' adult magazines. Pages 39 through 43. Incidentally, Dr. Dobson served on the Surgeon General's Committee on Pornography. Chapter 14 of the book, edited by Tom Menery, has the title, The Report of the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, pages 269 through 309. Between May 1985 and February 1986, the Attorney General of the United States convened a series of 6 public hearings on pornography. I have time to provide you with a brief summary of the findings of that commission. Among the crimes found to be associated with pornography are murder, physical violence, damage to property, prostitution, and other sexual abuse, narcotics distribution, money laundering and tax violations, and fraud. Page 274. One of the people to testify before the commission was Andrea Dworkin, a radical feminist and a professional writer. I cannot read all of Andrea Dworkin's testimony because some of it would be inappropriate for my audience. I shall choose brief excerpts from her graphic testimony. And the major motif of pornography as a form of entertainment is that women are raped and violated and humiliated until we discover that we like it, and at that point we ask for more. In this country where I live, there is trafficking in pornography that exploits mentally and physically disabled women, women who are maimed. There is amputee pornography, a trait in women who have been maimed in that way, as if that is a sexual fetish for men. In this country where I live, there is trade in racism as a form of sexual pleasure, so that the plantation is presented as a form of sexual gratification for the black woman slave who has pleased to be abused, pleased to be raped, and pleased to be hurt. Page 286. Very few people will dispute the information I have furnished in our study today, but the question is, what can be done about it? We know that there is more pornography available than any other time in the history of the world. In the United States alone, there are 4 million pornographic websites. There are at least 276 million web pages of pornography on the Internet. The problem is almost overwhelming. But the situation is not hopeless. That is, if parents and other concerned Americans decide to make some changes. Parents and the rest of us must begin by praying to God Almighty for help. We know there is great power in prayer. James 5:16. The poet has well said, God moves in mysterious ways His wonders to perform. But prayer alone is not adequate. We must work and pray. Parents must not allow the children to have access to television or to the Internet without parental supervision. Parents must know what their children are seeing and hearing. Incidentally, many of the songs our children are hearing are just as sleazy and immoral as what they're seeing on television or on the Internet. Parents are responsible before God for what their children see and hear. All of us must work together to eradicate this destructive element from our communities. We must speak out against this evil. We must remember that silence can be sinful. Thank you for listening, and may God richly bless you.